And welcome to the Educate Your Travel Podcast. Once again, my name is Jordan Carnes. Thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot wait to get into this episode, hopefully just invigorate you, get you excited about getting up, getting out, and traveling, exploring, and experiencing the world. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and quit talking so I can keep talking, and let's get into the episode. And welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here again today. If you notice from the title of today's podcast, it's going to be a little different from my normal itineraries where I sit and talk about, you know, one country and sort of a week there or a few days. And the reason I'm doing that is because these five cities actually that I'm going to be talking about today, they're all sort of related in terms of being travel hubs. And what I mean by that is either, you know, they are the home of a certain large airline, or, you know, they're just a larger city in a region where a lot of traffic, you know, passes through. And so with that being said, all these cities that I'm going to be talking about, if you're in that sort of area travel-wise, more than likely you're either going to have a connection or just a really good layover in one of these cities. And so remember, there's good layovers and bad layovers. We have our good layovers, you know, that are, you know, a short amount of time and it's not very wasteful when it comes to your time budget, or really long layovers during a good, you know, time window. So anywhere from like 6 a.m. to 9, 10 at night, maybe 4, 5, 6 hours within that window, you know, that offers you plenty of time to feel comfortable leaving the airport. And it's also during the day when shops, museums, and sites are open. So you also have your bad layovers, which are kind of during the opposite times. So long layovers at, you know, like 6 at night to 6 a.m, where nothing's really open. There's not much that you can actually even do during those times. So really, you're either just going straight to a hotel or you're trying to spend the night somewhere in the airport. So I've had good layovers, or at least decent layovers, in all these places that I'm going to be talking about today. And so I kind of just want to share what you can do in these locations in a day, or during sort of, you know, a good layover time slot. And so the cities I'm going to be talking about today are Dubai and Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, Bangkok in Thailand, and then also New York City in the United States. So I'm gonna go in that order. So if you want to kind of skip around, if you're just looking for one thing in particular, or if you want to, you know, follow this ride all the way to the end, I'm gonna start off at Dubai for the UAE. And this itinerary, I had about 18 hours of layover time in the UAE, and it was a blast, and it was packed full, but I got a lot done. And I actually was able to see both Dubai and Abu Dhabi during that 18 hours. So if you have, you know, a extended layover, such, you know, like 18 hours, that's a really long layover. If whether you're starting, you start off in Dubai or Abu Dhabi, you can reach all these sites within that time period, no matter where you're starting from. So I did land in Dubai, so I'm going to start off with those sites first. Obviously, Dubai is the home of the Burj Khalifa, which currently is the tallest building in the world. I would definitely recommend taking the subway. You can buy a subway day pass for pretty cheap, and it goes all the way around the city. So I'm kind of digressing here, but I recommend just kind of taking the subway from one end to the other. It's a great way to, you know, get an overview of the city, see the skylines, things like that. So I definitely recommend at least getting, you know, riding the subway a little bit. It's really easy to figure out. There's like two lines and they connect, obviously. So it's pretty easy to figure out and it's definitely worth the few bucks that it costs. So Burj Khalifa, you can take the subway almost right to it. And you can actually go inside the Burj Khalifa. I did not do that simply because of the cost. It was about $50, I think, to go halfway up, and a little over $100 to go all, like, three quarters of the way up. So you don't even actually get to go to the top, which I thought was kind of disappointing. and I did not think the price tags fit, you know, the experience that I would have doing that. And so I did not go inside the Burj Khalifa, but it is definitely very impressive, and I would highly recommend at least going, you know, to it. And right next door to the Burj Khalifa is actually the Dubai Mall. And so I definitely, you know, I recommend both of these sites, and so they're right next to each other. So, you know, hit those things up. Dubai Mall is really cool. If you think of any high-end brand, they probably have a store there. I was carrying my big old, you know, backpacker's backpack, and I had on like cargo pants and a sweaty t-shirt, and definitely did not fit in that mall, but it was really cool just to walk around, see all the stores. They had live music going on, you know, in the middle of the mall, and during that UAE heat wave, it's just really nice to get into the AC, get into the shade, and it's a really nice mall just to hang out at. Also, there's a couple cool beaches. There's South Beach and Sunset Beach. Sunset Beach is probably the most famous beach there. There's that hotel that looks sort of like a sail. It's like a 6-star hotel or 7-star hotel, something like that. But it's really pretty. I actually did not get to go to Sunset Beach. I went to South Beach instead. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time at South Beach, but Sunset Beach looks amazing from what I've seen. And if you have the option, I would definitely check out Sunset Beach if you have the opportunity. South Beach, there's a lot of shops and some restaurants and some little outlet malls. It's really pretty. It's right, there's sort of like a canal that goes through it, and there's this really cool bridge that you can walk across to get to some of the shops. I hung out there for a few hours at the end of the day, like sunset, and then to around 9, 10 o'clock. And it's really nice, really chill over there in that area of town. And the subway goes right up to it. I think I had to walk a block maybe to get to the actual beach. So very pretty, very cool. Definitely recommend hitting up at least one of those beaches for sunset or just sometime during your stay there. Now, I also, like I said earlier, I went to Abu Dhabi when I was in the UAE. And it's one of the first things I did. I landed around 6 in the morning and I left around midnight, I think. And so I went straight to the bus station when I landed. And the reason I did that was just to be on the safe side. You know, I always like to be like in the area of where my airport is so that, you know, if something goes wrong, I have plenty of time to come up with an alternate solution. So I did not want to be stuck in Abu Dhabi and not have a way to get back at like 7 o'clock at night when my flight was at midnight. So I did that first thing in the morning just in case, you know, if I need to get a taxi or whatever on the way back, everything would be taken care of and I didn't have to stress about time or anything like that. So it is a 2-hour each way drive to Abu Dhabi from Dubai or vice versa. So 4 hours round trip. And honestly, you know, it was a pretty cheap bus ticket, maybe $20 round trip, not too bad. And the main reason, actually the only reason I wanted to go to Abu Dhabi was to see the Grand Mosque. And this is one of the largest, most beautiful mosque in the world. It's almost completely white. There's marble inlay. Thinking back on it, the inlay really reminds me of the Taj Mahal in India, just how the colors go and everything. It's really pretty. And I think I stayed probably about an hour at the Grand Mosque, just kind of walking around, things like that. Definitely recommend hitting that up, especially if you're in Abu Dhabi. For some people, it might not be worth, you know, a 4-hour round trip drive to just to go see this one thing, because that's literally all I did. But I thought it was worth it. I still do, and it's definitely a great stop. Now, just like any mosque that you'll go visit during your travels, you have to make sure, you know, you're dressed appropriately, everything like that. No shoulders, no knees. Have to take your shoes off, things like that. I was a little confused about some of their kind of stipulations, I guess. I was wearing just a regular t-shirt. It was like a bright blue color, though. And when I went, they told me that I needed to put on one of their white shirts. And so I did, of course. And, you know, I was walking around and I noticed other people with brightly colored shirts and things like that. So I'm not sure if they told them to do the same thing and they just didn't do it. Or, you know, if they just randomly told me to wear one of their white shirts. I'm not really sure, but I don't think that's something that's gonna happen every time. But if they do tell you, you know, that you need to change or something, they have like those white t-shirts that I had to wear. or head coverings, things like that available for you to kind of like borrow, and then you just return them before you leave after you've walked around the mosque. But it's very pretty. Definitely recommend going there. Definitely recommend the bus. I mean, it was very simple. No stops. You just got on in Dubai and you stopped in Abu Dhabi. I took a taxi from the bus station to the Grand Mosque, and then I just did the whole thing in reverse, and very easy to figure out. Definitely worth the few hour drive. It actually gave me some time to rest and take a quick nap because I had landed at 6 in the morning. I was pretty tired from my trip. I actually landed from Cairo. I'd flown in from Egypt. But the UAE is the hub of Emirates Airlines, and I honestly don't think you can fly that airline internationally and not go through one of those two cities. I think you could fly from like New York to London, and they would still make you fly through Dubai. So if you are flying Emirates or, you know, in that sort of Middle East area, you're more than likely going to fly in to one of those cities. I had two layovers there, one on the way to Egypt, and that one was only 3 or 4 hours, so I did not go into the city. But obviously for the 18-hour layover, it totally made sense, and I had no worries about time to do that layover. So if you have a long layover, I think if you stayed in Dubai, you could definitely hit all those places and maybe, you know, a 6-hour time span. I think you could probably leave the airport and hit up those places within 6 hours. So you'd have plenty of time. Abu Dhabi, same thing, maybe even a little shorter. I'm not sure where the airport is outside of the city center, but if you're just going to the Grand Mosque or whatever. Now, I will say a couple other things about the UAE. You do need a transit visa, which they offer on arrival, at least for U.S. citizens, and it is free for U.S. citizens. If you stay, I believe it's a 72-hour transit visa. It could be 48, but I'm pretty sure it's 72. That's what they usually are. If you stay longer than that, you will need an actual visa, but that's obviously not what I'm talking about at the moment. Now, if you know, if some of these things you don't really float your boat, or maybe if you don't want to go to Abu Dhabi, you just want to stay in Dubai all day, there's a couple other things that I found to be pretty interesting looking whenever I was planning my trip. One of them is you can go skydiving, and that has got to be amazing, to skydive over Dubai. I can't even imagine how beautiful that scenery would be, not to mention the fact that you're skydiving. So definitely would recommend checking that out. I believe it was like $180, $200, which is the main reason I kind of, you know, skipped that one at the time. But if you have the money and if that excites you, tell me how that is, because that has got to be amazing. Also, obviously, pretty much all of UAE is a desert. And so there's a lot of things that you can go and do out in the desert on the dunes. You can go ATVing, dirt biking, four-wheeling, things like that. You can go camping. Bedouin camping, that looks pretty awesome. And I also saw like camel treks, things like that, where you can ride camels through the dunes. All those things looked pretty awesome. I did not, you know, have time to fit all that stuff into my day-long itinerary. But obviously, you know, people go for multiple days, a week at a time. 1 day for me, you know, was a good amount of time. I don't think, you know, I have the need to go back to the UAE to spend more time for things that I missed out on. I would definitely take advantage of another layover if that came into play. But a full, you know, 18 hours, a full day in the UAE is a great amount of time, and you can get a very good overview of the country in that amount of time. Okay, so following up on the UAE is going to be Malaysia. Now, Malaysia is not necessarily a huge hub. I don't think there's really any, you know, major airlines that have their home base at Kuala Lumpur Airport. But I feel like I flew through there a couple of different times on my summer trip, my summer backpacking trip through Southeast Asia. And so even though it's not necessarily a main hub, I think it's just so centrally located that if you're in Southeast Asia and you're flying, especially the budget airlines, you're more than likely going to have a layover in Kuala Lumpur. I had a layover there from Indonesia to Nepal, and then also from Cambodia to Vietnam. So, you know, flew right over Malaysia both times, and we stopped there. So if you're, you know, in Southeast Asia, I have no doubts you'll probably, you know, fly through Malaysia if you are, you know, flying from place to place. I had a good layover planned when I initially booked my flights and everything. I was supposed to land around 11 in the morning, and then I was leaving at like 6 the next morning. So I was planning on sleeping in the airport. It's going to be a rough night, but, you know, worth it. Save some money. I unfortunately missed my flight from Cambodia to Kuala Lumpur. Long story, that'll be on a different podcast episode, I'm sure, here in the future. That was like the only flight I've missed in like 60-something flights in the past 2 years. So that's, you know, a good streak broken there. But, you know, there's a lot of flights to Kuala Lumpur, and so I was pretty easily able to book another flight. And I ended up landing around 6 in the afternoon. So instead of 11, that cut off about 6-7 hours of travel time. So I did not get to do everything that was on my itinerary originally, but, you know, just rolled with it and kind of figured it out. And I made the most of the few hours that I had in the city. So first off, I recommend, you know, getting a metro pass. You can take the metro into the city center. It is pretty expensive. I was pretty taken aback. It was like $40-$50 for your ticket to go to the city center, use the metro. You can't even use all the metro. It's like there's 3 or 4 different colors, and you can use like 3 of the 4 colors or something on a certain pass. I don't know. It wasn't too difficult to figure out, but when the guy was explaining the cost breakdown, I did not know what was going on, and I was just like, this is where I want to go. Tell me what to get. So it was pretty expensive to do that, but it's definitely going to be cheaper than like a taxi because it is like a 45-minute drive into the city. So you kind of just have to suck it up and do it. So I'm going to first talk about the things I did do, and then I'll talk about the things I didn't do but I wanted to do. So first off, the National Mosque. It's one of the, you know, best mosque, obviously in Malaysia because the National Mosque, but also in the area. It's very pretty. It was obviously night when I was there. But, you know, it was all lit up. The architecture is amazing. Once again, all of the inlays and mosaics and stuff like that, really cool. I just love going to different mosques and seeing, you know, the architecture and, you know, all the art involved in making those. And so also recommend the Petronas Towers. The Petronas Towers are the tallest connected building. So there's 2 twin towers, and they're connected by sort of like an airwalk. And I also believe they're the largest standing twin towers in the world as well. So very impressive. There's a few different places that you can go and see the Petronas Towers. You can obviously just walk straight up to them and look at them there. There's actually a little like lake behind the Petronas Towers that's really awesome and offers great views of the city skyline. Standing there, I honestly believe that Kuala Lumpur has one of the best skylines that I've ever seen. It was very impressive. Huge buildings everywhere, all lit up. Loved it. Definitely recommend taking in that site. There's also like a park that's maybe a block or two away from the Petronas Towers. I did not go there, but I've seen a lot of great pictures that look like it would be a great viewing place as well. So either of those, just make sure you see the Petronas Towers. I'm sure if you get anywhere near them, you'll be able to pick them out and recognize them. Now, there's also a mall inside the Petronas Towers. I really kind of just stumbled across it because I saw people going into the Petronas Towers and thought, huh, let's check it out and see inside. So I went inside and there was a mall. It was getting close to around 9 o'clock. A lot of stuff was closing down. So I didn't really, you know, stroll around the mall too much. But I did. I'd been in Asia for like 6 weeks. I was craving some American food, found a Chili's inside the Petronas Twin Towers Mall, sat down, had some amazing fajitas. I think I almost cried. It was amazing, and I would definitely recommend the Petronas Towers and the mall, especially at night. Definitely recommend going and seeing that at night if you, you know, have that option. Now, a couple things that I did not do. The one thing that I had planned to do that I didn't do was the Batu Caves. The Batu Caves is sort of a religious site right outside of Kuala Lumpur. I believe the metro system goes that far outside the city and will take you to the Batu Caves. If not, I think you'll just have to take a bus or a cab. But the Batu Caves is a religious site. There's a cave up on this mountain. And if you've seen pictures of Malaysia, I'm sure you've seen the Batu Caves because there's that multicolored staircase that goes all the way to the top. There's a lot of statues and figurines and things like that. I believe it's one of the most, you know, popular tourist attractions in Malaysia. I'm pretty sure it is in Kuala Lumpur, at least. Kind of disappointed I didn't get to go see that. But, you know, it is what it is. Once again, if I ever get the chance to go back to Malaysia, I'll definitely, you know, that'll be on my short list of things to do there. But, you know, maybe we'll see what happens next time. So Batu Caves, check that out if you have time. That is, you know, like I said, a little bit outside of the city. So that might add an hour and a half to 2 hours round trip to, you know, your layover, you know. So make sure you keep that in mind, how far outside of the city that is. Also, if you have time, there is a free bus tour in Kuala Lumpur that will kind of just take you around the city. I actually had not planned on doing this simply because, you know, it's like an hour and a half to do. And there are certain time slots that you have to do it in, obviously, because you have to catch the bus. And so that didn't really fit into, it was too rigid for me to put that into my schedule at the time because of how short my layover was going to be there. But, you know, if, especially in the early morning, early afternoon, I would recommend the free bus tour. I'm sure that would be very interesting. You'd really get a good view of that skyline that I mentioned earlier. So, you know, based off of those things, I'd plan on doing all that except for the Batu Caves in what, you know, like 7, 8, 9 hours worth of time. And I ended up getting, you know, I got it all done except for Batu Caves in about, you know, 4 hours. So, you know, take into account that there is an hour, you know, into town from the airport and an hour back. So, you know, maybe like a 6 hour layover or up to really, you know, get to see quite a few things inside Kuala Lumpur and not feel too rushed. But definitely, if you have the opportunity, jump into the city, see the skyline of Kuala Lumpur. You won't regret it. And hopefully I get to go back and see the Batu Caves. All right, so Bangkok, Thailand is a hub. It is the hub of Southeast Asia. I mean, they are the home of AirAsia. They're the home of Thai Airlines. And a lot of other Southeast Asian airlines will fly into Bangkok on an hourly basis. They actually have two airports, and I'm beginning to figure this out the more that I travel. Huge cities like this usually have their budget airport and then, you know, their regular, more expensive, fancy airport. And so Bangkok is no different. And if you have a shorter layover and you might need to get from one airport to the other, they do have a free transit bus. So definitely take advantage of that. That would be a very expensive taxi ride. It is about an hour from one airport to the other. So if you are doing your airline flights by yourself, make sure that one, either you're, you know, flying into and leaving out of the same airport, or two, you have at least, you know, 3 hours to get from one airport to the other and then get through customs and all that if you are flying into one airport and leaving from the other airport. So that is definitely something to keep in mind and double, triple, quadruple check before you book those flights that, you know, you have that figured out and you have a plan of action. So obviously the bigger airport's going to be your huge international flights. Like if you're flying into Bangkok from, say, the U.S. or something like that, you're more than likely going to fly into the main airport. And then, you know, if you're flying to, like, Cambodia or India or something like that, then you'll probably fly out of the budget airport. Either way, it doesn't really matter. They're actually both about 30, 45 minutes outside of the city center. And so, you know, no matter which airport you're going into, you know, this itinerary will kind of fit either bill. Now, I actually spent the night in Bangkok. I arrived around 9 in the morning, and then I left around 6 the next morning. So I did spend the night, and you know, that was, I'm not actually even sure why I decided to spend the night instead of just spending the night in the airport. I think, you know, I honestly don't know, thinking about it. But I did spend the night in a hostel. It was, you know, like $1, something stupid cheap. And so maybe I thought a dollar was worth sleeping on an actual bed that night. So once you get into the city, I recommend sort of starting out near the Khao Son Road. That is sort of the backpacker region of Bangkok. I did not stay on Khao Son Road simply because it is sort of like the party area where all the backpackers hang out. There's a lot of bars, restaurants, things like that. And I read a lot of reviews that said it was absolutely crazy and you are not going to sleep at all if you're staying on that road. So I stayed a couple blocks away, so I was near the area, but I didn't have to like spend the night with lights flashing and things like that. So start off in that area. Definitely recommend, you know, hubbing out of that area of Bangkok. Now, Bangkok is huge, obviously. There's a ton of temples. And, you know, for me personally, if I see a lot of the same thing, I kind of get like overloaded and then I just don't even care anymore. And so this will happen, you know, no matter where I go, whether it's a museum and I've seen 50 million art pieces and I just don't care, or I'm in, you know, Greece and I'm looking at my 20th temple. It kind of just all starts to look the same. I'm not seeing anything new or exciting that's really just grabbing my attention. And so it just kind of loses, you know, it doesn't have the same energy for me anymore. But Bangkok is a little bit the same when it comes to temples. I mean, they are everywhere. And so I really, you know, had to make a conscious decision of I need to pick two or three temples that I'm going to see. And that's really going to mean a lot to me because I'm not just getting bogged down with all these different temples. And if you like, you know, going to different temples and you're going to be excited to see your 20th temple in, you know, 12 hours, then go for it. There's plenty of them there to do that. But I'm going to give you the three that I went to, and I would definitely recommend, you know, recommend these three temples. And if I went back to Bangkok, I would probably go to some of these again. So the first one is probably, I would say maybe the most famous one, and it's Wat Pho. And Wat Pho has the golden Buddha, the reclining golden Buddha statue. It is the longest reclining Buddha statue in the world. And I believe it's almost, I think it's 200 feet. It's something really ridiculous. And it fills like an entire building. It's pretty crazy. Definitely recommend going in there and seeing that. There's mother of pearl inlays like all over this thing. It's gorgeous. Very impressive. So definitely check out the Golden Buddha reclining statue. Very cool. And then also there's different buildings with inside like the compound. So make sure, you know, you walk around, explore the whole thing. When I was walking around, there were some kids who like went to school there or something, and they were doing some like dance routine. I honestly have no clue what that was. I stopped and watched it for a little bit. There were a ton of people taking pictures and being kind of weird about it. So I kind of just kept meandering on through to the next thing. So, you know, never know what's going to happen when you go to a Wat there in Thailand. So after Wat Pho, sort of, you know, like a block or two away is Wat Arun. And I will put these in the description so that you can read them in case I'm completely butchering the names. And to get to Wat Arun, you have to go across the river there in Thailand. So you take a water taxi, and it, you know, it'll cost you like 20 cents or something, super cheap, nothing that's going to break the bank. And it was cool to be out on the water, kind of get a different perspective of the city. But Wat Arun was really interesting. The architecture was really different from a lot of the other temples, but it really summed up, in my opinion, the architecture there. And that's weird to say that it sums up the architecture, but it was completely different from something else. But there was just like a ton of different tiny statues on this main temple roof. And it was just really interesting. You'll have to look up pictures. There's pictures on my Instagram. I'll put that link on there. But very cool. Definitely would recommend Wat Arun. It was just a cool architecture experience. And since it was across the water from the rest of the sort of city, it was a little less crowded, which was really nice as well. Finally, the third one I would recommend is the Golden Hill Temple. And this one I would recommend going at sunset. You have to climb a bunch of stairs to get to the actual temple. And so you have a good view of the entire city of Bangkok. And so you can get some really nice sunset photos. It's just a nice view, a great way to end the day. When I was up there, there were a bunch of monks doing like little rituals, which was really interesting to witness as well. So Wat Pho, Wat Arun, and the Golden Hill Temple, definitely would recommend those three. I knocked those out in, you know, a few hours, and recommend you do the same. Now, a few other things while you're in Bangkok. Food in Bangkok is amazing. And so definitely recommend sticky rice with mango. It is, so it's supposed to be a dessert. I ate it for an actual meal and it was great. So check that out while you're there. Pot stickers, the street food there is phenomenal. This next restaurant I'm going to talk about, there was this huge street food sort of setup where there was probably like 10 different, you know, grills going all at the same time. It was really cool. Street food is super cheap. Definitely recommend it. If something looks good, buy it, eat it. You won't regret it. Well, you might, but for the most part, it's always pretty good. And, you know, it's for the experience. You know, you got to try it. So also, you're in Thailand, you got to try some pad thai, right? Funny story about this pad thai. I was walking back from the Golden Hill Temple. I was hungry for dinner. I had noticed that all those street food vendors were setting up whenever I was walking to the temples. And so I was like, I'm just going to eat the street food on my way back. And that's going to be my dinner. And I'm going to go back to the hostel, go to bed. So I'm walking along past the street food vendors and I notice a line. And it's a long line, like at least half a block long. And so, you know, I'm kind of thinking, like, this looks like a restaurant, but, you know, I can't read the writing of the restaurant. And so I get in line. I say, huh, this is interesting. It must be good. So I jumped in line. And there were some English people speaking English in front of me. And so I kind of leaned over to them and I was like, what is this that we're waiting on? And they said that it's like the best pad thai place in all of Bangkok. And that they, you know, had been there like for a long time waiting in line and that it was going to be amazing. And so I said, cool, let's figure it out. Let's do it. So I stood in line for about 45 minutes and I finally get up to the front and this place has won like Michelin stars, all these food review awards. And I'm just like, wow, how in the world did I luck out on finding this? So after about 45 minutes, they finally put me in a seat. I ordered some pad thai. Best pad thai I've ever had in my life. It was amazing. It was really inexpensive. It was like $2 or $3 for a plate of pad thai. The serving was not very big. I could have definitely ordered two servings. But there was a line a mile long behind me, and I did not, you know, want to order again after I finished eating my first bowl or plate of pad thai. This place was called Tip Samai, I'll put that in the description below as well. It was very good. Definitely recommend it. And that street food place that had all those different vendors was right next to it. So two for one there. I did go and get some street food after the pad thai because I was still hungry. And both were good. Did not get sick. So Bangkok street food, good to go. Now, one last thing I will say about Bangkok before I move on. Is one, I would stay in that Khao Son Road area that I mentioned earlier, but I would not stay on the road, sort of just stay in the area. Then you have like all the benefits of it, but then you're also not, you know, you don't have any of the negatives either. So stay sort of in the area, but not on the actual road. And then also taxis are kind of difficult to get early in the morning in Bangkok. I left my hostel around 6 a.m., and I probably walked a quarter of a mile before I even saw a taxi. And then it was all that it took probably 5 minutes for me to like show him my boarding passes and show him my Google Maps of where I needed to go for him to understand what I was trying to tell him. So I was actually a little nervous there for a little bit that I was like, how am I gonna get to the airport? I can't find a taxi. And then this guy doesn't understand what I'm trying to say and where I need to go. So, you know, whether you start out a little earlier than normal to find a taxi to go to the airport, or you have like your hostel hook it up for you, just keep that in mind that it might be difficult if you're leaving in the morning early to get a taxi right away. So, Bangkok, once again, There are a ton of amazing places to see in Thailand. I'm definitely not saying just go to Bangkok for a day and call it quits. You could spend a lot of time in Thailand in general. But for a day in Bangkok, I felt like I accomplished quite a bit. And, you know, I was satisfied with my experience there in Bangkok. I did do a lot. Like I said, I was there from 9 in the morning all the way till the next day. And so I'm not sure if you could totally get all this in, you know, in a shorter layover. But if you have like 12 hours, you could definitely hit a couple of those temples, have some good food, and just enjoy the city of Bangkok. All right, so pretty quickly here, I'm going to run through New York City. And this is one of those places where if you are flying, especially to Europe from the United States, or if you're flying to the United States, more than likely you're going to be flying through New York or Newark, New Jersey. And either of these places are very close together, and so you can do these things either place, JFK or Newark, New Jersey. Or also LaGuardia, I suppose, as well. So I've had multiple experiences in New York. I've spent several days in New York. I've spent a few hours in New York. And so I'm kind of going to break down just a few of the ideas of things that you could do in a short layover. I'm not really going to dive into too many details because there are so many things that you can do in New York City. I'm just going to kind of give you an overview to kind of help you, you know, form some ideas of what you can do in this city. Obviously, it is a huge city, and it is called the city that never sleeps, but, you know, I'm not really sure what's open at the moment, what's not. Definitely, I flew in through New York from Turkey a few weeks ago, and it's kind of weird. I don't know if I would, do a long layover in New York at the moment. Or if you can, I mean, you might have to get tested, COVID tested, to even enter the city, or quarantine. You had to fill out like a flyer when you landed. I don't know. It was really weird. But hopefully when things get back to normal, here's some ideas for you. Obviously, great sports teams. You got the Yankees. You got the Mets. You see the Knicks. The Nets. I guess you could go see some football. Who we got? You got the Giants. You got the Jets. So, great sports teams. That would be a pretty long layover if you worked it out to be able to go see a sporting event. But that would be pretty cool. You know, I haven't personally done that myself, seen a sporting event during a long layover. But if you have, let me know. That'd be pretty cool. Also, obviously, there's Broadway shows. Times Square, Rockefeller Center. Those are all really cool places to go visit. I've never been to a Broadway show. I'm assuming that they last a long time, just like a sporting event. So, once again, you'd really have to work the system there. But Times Square and Rockefeller Center, are really cool places to visit. And you can kind of just take your time. You can just stroll around, see the sights, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of cool museums. The Met, the Museum of Art there in New York City, is incredible. Has a lot of good pieces in it. New York is a bustling, hustling place, and there are buses to the city center from all of the main airports. It did cost me maybe like $20, $25 for the round-trip ticket to pretty much Times Square from Newark, New Jersey, so not terrible, and it was about 45 minutes to an hour long both ways, so keep that in mind with your layover times. My last long layover in New York where I left the airport, I would say I probably left around maybe 5 in the afternoon, and I got back around 11 that night. So that was 6 hours. I took a bus into the city. I went to Rockefeller Center, Times Square, kind of just hung out there in downtown. And then I took a bus back and had plenty of time for my flight. That was a few hours later. Once again, I don't have too many very specific things for New York. I haven't been in a long time, and so I don't want to really, give you specifics here. But New York is a great place. It is a hub in the United States, and if you fly into the U.S. or fly to Europe from the U.S., you're more than likely going to be stopping either in New York or New Jersey. And so definitely take advantage of a layover there if you can. So with that being said, that's all I've got for you today. Hopefully, you know, if you're visiting one of these four places soon, if you're lucky enough to have a good layover at one of these locations, you'll be able to, you know, use some of this information to help you out on that trip. Remember, if you need, you know, any pictures, anything like that to kind of look around, research, feel free, check out my Instagram at educateyourtravel. Leave me a comment there. Leave me a comment here. Let me know if I missed something or if there's, you know, another hub that you visited. Obviously, there are multiple others. London is a huge hub. So is South Korea, Japan. Those are pretty big hubs. And then on the West Coast, like San Francisco, LAX, those are big hubs too that I've not been able to really discover yet. I have flown through all of those places, except for South Korea. I have not been to South Korea, but I haven't really been able to get a good long layover at those places yet. So hopefully I will in the future, but let me know if you can think of any others. And so with that being said, remember, it is up to you to make your life interesting. So get up, get out, explore the world, and take that next adventure. Thanks again for joining me here today. I can't wait to talk to you next time.